Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
From the Associated Press, I'm Megan Crane, and this is Ground Game, a podcast about politics from the ground up. We're breaking into our hiatus to bring you a bonus episode of Ground Game. AP's congressional correspondent Lisa Mascaro sat down for an interview with Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. They talked about President Trump, freshman Democrats, and her first 100 days back with the Speaker's gavel. Here is the interview in its entirety.
It's the first 100 days of the new Congress.
Yes.
And so we just, it's a great sort of built-in milestone to sort of capture how things are going.
Thank you. So, appreciate that.
And thank you again for having us here at the for the interview. Tell us, just what are you most proud of in these first 100 days? And tell us a little bit about what you see as the challenges ahead.
Well, I'm most proud of my members. The House Democratic Caucus is beautifully diverse, transformative in terms of having such a large freshman class. I like to say we made history because in the 1974, when the Watergate babies came in, it was historic, it was large, it was transformative, but not one of them had a gavel from day one in the first year. Not one of them had a gavel. And from day one in this Congress, 18 of our freshmen have gavels. They're subcommittee chairs. 10 of them are women. So in terms of the transformative class, the opportunities for leadership that are there, and the diversity that our caucus has, and I think they have demonstrated that our diversity is our strength, our unity is our power, and we were able to show that power in what we've done.
You had said on the campaign trail at one point that you thought it would be you would have more fun if you were Speaker this time than last time. How has it been different being Speaker this
Well,
time?
I wouldn't say more fun. I mean, I said I might enjoy it more. I never really thought about enjoying being Speaker. I never thought of being Speaker. All I thought of was doing the work. No, it's not more fun to have Donald Trump as President of the United States. President Bush and President Obama believed in governance, a role of government in the future of our country and for the American people. While I disagreed on some issues like the war in Iraq with President Bush, we worked together on many other issues, and of course with President Obama, a very successful agenda. My point there was, being Speaker this time, I might savor the speakership. But again, if I use the word fun, that's a relative word. For people in our line of work, fun means enjoy hard work.
Let's quickly get to some of the news, and then maybe we can circle back. We understand that the special counsel Mueller's report is coming soon. Given what we know about Attorney General Barr and the synopsis that he put together already, do you trust this process in what we will see from the actual Mueller report?
Well, I trust, I do believe special counsel Mueller is a person to be respected. It remains to be seen what his report is. When we see it, we can make a judgment. I'm very concerned about the statements made by Attorney General Barr. I think that they undermine our Constitution. They undermine the role of the Attorney General. He is not the Attorney General of Donald Trump. He is the Attorney General of the United States.
Do you trust that we will see the full report?
It's a matter of time. But we will see it. It's just up to them as to whether we want to do it sooner rather than later. We want it sooner, they want it later. It will happen.
The president says that Democrats will never be satisfied, that you're launching all these investigations. Will Democrats be satisfied?
We're not launching investigations. We're doing our constitutional responsibility for oversight. Oversight for how they are dismantling the Affordable Care Act, oversight and what we, and all of the functions of government, oversight and what we want to do legislatively to see what has worked before or not. So it's oversight in terms of the Constitution saying the Congress of the United States has certain responsibilities, and going with those responsibilities is the oversight to see how they have, the executive branch has implemented them. If they want to call it an investigation, that's not right. There may be investigations that spring from the oversight, but one step at a time.
Do you think that there will be an end to the oversight and the investigations? Do you think that, to the president's question, that Democrats would never be satisfied
Well, I'll be satisfied when we have a new president of the United States who is a Democrat. So my satisfaction does not spring from him. It springs from something else happening. But the fact is this. We are not just focusing on him. I know the press just focuses on him and Mueller and Barr and that. But we're focusing on what we said we would do in the campaign, a campaign for the people. Lower health care costs by lowering the cost of prescription drugs and preserving the pre-existing condition benefit. Lower health care costs, bigger paychecks by building the infrastructure of America in a green way, and more honest government, cleaner government. Lower health care, bigger paycheck, cleaner government. That's what our focus is on. That's how we spend most of our time. The committees of jurisdiction that oversight over the actions of the executive branch in relationship to an assault on our electoral system, that's their responsibility. It's our responsibility, but it's not all that we are doing.
Is it frustrating that it's often seen that way, that there is the megaphone of the White House and yet Congress is trying to speak to the American people
about
what
you're doing? We don't agonize. We organize. Yes, we would like it better if there would be more focus on what matters really to the American people in their lives, their health care, their job security, their confidence in government, and the integrity of our elections, which make a difference in how we go forward as a country. But again, we don't agonize over it. We're just organizing around it and go forward.
And hopefully we'll have a minute to get back to some of those questions. Before we move on, I do want to ask you, you made a comment the other day about the issue of impeachment, and you said, you know, he's not worth it. The
president's
not worth it. Given what we know so far from Special Counsel Mueller's report, that he said he did not exonerate the president on the issue of obstruction, do you still think he's not worth it? Or
yeah, I think he's not worth it, and I don't think he's worth it because it takes away attention from what we want to do for the American people and their economic security. Reason that the Attorney General and others are saying that he hasn't been perhaps indicted is because they don't believe a president should be indicted, and the Constitution has provided another route. That would be impeachment. My view is that impeachment is very divisive in the country, and when we see what we need to see, it may be imperative that he be impeached. But up until then, he's not worth it.
Mm-hmm. What could you see that would...
Let us see the report. It's no use speculating on it. The fact is that this president has engaged in activities that are unethical, un-American in terms of taking babies out of the arms of their moms, unpatriotic, in every way he is unfit to be president of the United States. Is that an impeachable offense? Well, it depends on what we see in the report. But I set a very high bar for impeachment because I think it's very divisive in the country. And one of our purposes is to unify, as our founders gave us guidance, e pluribus unum, from any one. They knew that we'd be different. They knew we'd be many. They didn't know how different, but they knew we had to be one.
Quickly, let's talk about the 2020 candidates. Let me just ask you, as a first woman speaker, history-making position that you're in, why do you think so many of the men who are running are gaining attention and sort of rising in the polls? Senator Sanders, Joe Biden, of course, former Congressman Beto O'Rourke, and Mayor Pete from Indiana seem to be the ones that are...
I think the women are doing very well. By the way, I think that we have a great... field of candidates. It isn't complete yet, I understand, but I think any one of them would be a better president of the United States than the current occupant. I know that's a low bar, but nonetheless, that's what I think. Now, in addition, we're very proud of the women candidates who are in the race, and most of the people you named, especially Vice President Biden and Senator Sanders, they have name identification. And they have a reputation, and it's a good, they're good at reputation, so it wouldn't be surprising that they would be in the forefront. But that's what campaigns are about, for people to make their case, show why they're running, what they care about, how they intend to get the job done, and how they connect with the American people. I think it's going to be very exciting.
Do you think it's a problem for Democrats if there ends up not being a woman on the ticket?
No. I mean, I hope there is. One of my saddest introductions is when they say I'm the most powerful woman in the history of America. I'm thinking, oh my, I wish I weren't. I wish I weren't, and I hope that I won't be for too much longer. But no, I think we're going to, the people will speak, they will choose the candidates, and it's no use our setting one standard or another. Would I love to see two women on the candidate? Yes. Would I love to see one? Yes. But it doesn't mean that if there isn't one on the candidate, on the ticket, ultimately on the ticket, that it's not a ticket that we should all get behind.
Mm-hmm. And I know you gave some advice to former Vice President Biden the other day on this issue of how he deals with women and others on the campaign trail. He was out the other day, and some took away that he seemed to be sort of making light of the situation and sort of joking about it. How do you think he's doing? Do you think he gets this issue?
Yeah, I think he does. I think what I'm more interested in about Vice President Biden is what he has done in his career for the American people and indeed for women in terms of the Violence Against Women Act, issues like equal pay for equal, all of the things that he has stood for. But apart from women, just for our community in general, which women benefit from. So again, I know that there's a fascination with the frivolous, and it's not frivolous. A woman comes forward, that's important. But what we want to know is, what are you going to do to help America's families deal with the concerns they have about globalization, what they're going to do about innovation and technology, how do they fit in a new economy, and how do women in particular fit there? And so let's when we're talking about women, let's talk about women more completely than just if Joe Biden is from a school of thought that is more friendly. And by the way, many of the women who have concerns about how, and I include myself among them, we're in the public arena. People come up to us. They embrace us. They hug us. What are you going to say? Don't hug me? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just culturally, generationally, there's some differences. But I don't think it's in any way a negative. And by the way, the American people seem to agree, if public opinion polling is worth anything, and I don't know if it is, but it doesn't seem to make a difference to too many people, that he shows a warmth in his personality. It's got to change because the world is changing, and I think it's good that it changes.
Let's talk about your role here. You lead this big, diverse caucus.
Yes.
You have a
Beautiful.
Lot of challenges because of that. Did a lot of people say that the caucus is, you know, pushing some of the members are pushing the caucus to the left. So far that you're becoming sort of the Tea Party, you have this Tea Party of the Left problem in your
caucus.
No,
we do not. No, let's disabuse anybody of a silly notion that we have a Tea Party of the Left. We do not. We have a Democratic Party, which has its usual exuberance. It's a big tent, and we have many points of view within our caucus, which we welcome. And it is a creative tension sometimes, but that's the Democratic Party. We don't want to be a rubber stamp caucus. We don't want to be a lockstep caucus. That's not who the Democrats are, and that's not what our vitality springs from. As I say, our diversity is our strength. Our unity is our power. The unity is because we are diverse, not because we are homogenous.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for the new members as they're getting settled in here, particularly Representative Ocasio-Cortez and how she is presenting herself?
Well, I don't think any of these members mean any advice. They came to Congress. They were elected by their constituents. They represent their districts. Their title and their job description are one of the same, representative. And by the way, the bulk of the members who are here, who brought us the majority, come from districts that are more mainstream and hold the center, and that's where we will win the White House, hold our majority, and grow our majority. In districts like mine and Alexandria's, other districts, that's exciting, but that's not where we won the majority.
Mm-hmm. As someone who's been in the public arena, though, and seen the way she is in the public arena, do you have any, do you see yourself at all as a mentor for her, or do you have any words of wisdom?
Well, the only way I mentor any of them is to just say to them, be yourself. Be yourself, know your own power, and be yourself. Don't worry about being like anybody else. Be yourself. And they're all fabulous, every one of them. They're just remarkable individuals. Understand their power and their their genuineness. That's really what is, people want to see who you really are. And that is, that's what matters, not what somebody else thinks you should be doing.
Republicans and others from the outside say these members are pushing Speaker Pelosi to the left, to a socialist agenda.
But that isn't true. And that's what they would say. Because what are they going to say? They have nothing to offer. The Republicans, what is their agenda? They have no, they're bankrupt in terms of ideas that really address the concerns of America's working families. So they dwell on some social issues and they dwell on their version of our story. But we will not let them characterize us. Mm-hmm. We know who we are, and we are a beautifully diverse Democratic Party who we're unified by the fact that we care intensely about America's working families, and that's what unifies us.
You mentioned your district back home in San Francisco. Did you ever think that as the representative of San Francisco, you could have members who are from the outside seen as challenging you from the left?
Like, I don't feel challenged. I don't. Maybe I'm missing something here. I don't feel challenged from the left. I think that I am from the left. I'm a progressive Democrat from San Francisco. The Republicans spent 131,000 ads describing me as such, and I'm proud of who I am. And nothing is a bigger honor for me than walk on the floor of the House as a representative of the city of San Francisco and our San Francisco values of caring about people. And as I say, in a very progressive way. So I don't feel challenged from the left. That may be somebody else's characterization, but it's not how I see it.
You mentioned people say you're the most powerful woman in American politics right now. Do you see your role?
Well, the Speaker of the House has awesome power, and the woman is the Speaker of the House. So I guess that means that I have great power.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that extends beyond the House and in shaping the party, as the sort of leader of the Democratic Party nationally?
I don't see parties being shaped from above. I think that has to bubble up, and that's why I say, as we watch the presidential campaigns, for example, to see who the people connect with. And that's the beauty of it all, to see who the people connect with. And as I have said to everyone, we have a beautiful array. When I say beautiful, in terms of values and ideas and strategic thinking for the future among our candidates for president. And we'll just see. That's what campaigns are. They introduce you to the public if you're new to them, or they reintroduce you. But you see, they compare, they contrast, they choose.
Talk to us a little bit about your relationship with the president. You and President Trump are sort of very different people in a lot of ways.
Completely. Completely and entirely.
Yeah. What do you see stylistically, substance? What does that tell us about your ability to sort of talk to each other, work together?
Well, it wouldn't matter who the president of the United States is. I respect the position that he or she, hopefully soon, holds, and that's an important one. I would hope that that person who holds that office respects his or her office as much as I respect their office. But I respect my own office as well, as Speaker of the House, independent, separate, co-equal branch of government as a check and balance on the White House. That's how we see the legislative branch, Article 1 of the Constitution. And so when I speak to the president, really, it's historic. When a speaker speaks to the president, it's a historic conversation. It's one branch of government to the next, co-equal branches of government. And again, I respectfully listen, I respectfully present, and hopefully to find common ground.
Have you spoken to him recently?
Yes, I spoke to him a few days ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On?
Was it Thursday? I don't know what day it was. Thursday of last week. And I had him here as a guest for St. Patrick's Day.
What was the conversation last week?
Conversation last week was what 80% of our conversations are about. Infrastructure, how we're going to proceed with it. We're calling upon the president to focus on what a bottom line would be as to how much we could invest and how we go forward. And I believe the president truly wants to have an infrastructure bill and an initiative that we can share and go forward that has traditionally not been partisan. So I think it's possible we can do that. I think it's also possible we can work together to reduce the cost of prescription drugs. We talk about that from time to time, including my most recent conversation with the president. And so we had other subjects, which I won't go into, but there were the two main ones that were the purpose of the call was infrastructure, somewhat prescription drugs, but the urgency is to get a dollar figure for the infrastructure.
Did you narrow on a dollar
figure?
We're
going to meet to do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, soon?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there a date set for that?
I don't give out dates of the president's schedule, so I don't know if it's in the public domain.
Do you think it would, the number that you're looking at?
I'm not even sure that we've agreed on a date, but he suggested a date.
Suggested that you meet on him. Do you think you're looking at a number larger than what he has proposed in the $200 billion?
That's a non-starter, $200 mm-hmm. billion. That doesn't even start. And I don't think the president is wedded to that proposal. It was too small, and it also placed too much of a burden on local governments. It was a non-starter in terms of how you get infrastructure built. When we make a decision about how we allocate resources, we wanted to have as much community support as possible, not political, but more community and civic decision-making, and we want dirt to fly. So we don't want to get engaged in a fight locally after we've put money in the pipeline, because there's a lot of competition for those funds, and we'd rather they go where we're going to see results as soon as possible.
What makes you think he does want to get to an infrastructure deal? Did he say anything?
He always says. I mean, I think 80% of the conversations I've had with the president have involved his interest and our interest, our common interest in infrastructure. And as I said, during the campaign, our For the People agenda was lower health care costs, bigger paychecks as I said during the campaign, our agenda was for the people, lower health care costs by lowering the cost of prescription drugs, bigger paychecks by building infrastructure of America, and then cleaner government, at least on the first two. I think the president, there's room, opportunity for us to get something done. And we're trying to be unifying by choosing areas and priorities where we can find common ground.
Were there parameters of the drug deal that you were able to narrow on? The prescription drug?
Well, that wasn't the nature of the discussion with the president, but we are working on that.
Okay. Can you just say, you did say that you two are very different in style and substance. How do you see the differences?
I don't, how can we say this? I think it's so very self-evident that the president is very different from every other person that anybody ever served with. So, you know, he is not only unique, he's, what would be the word? I say every president, to be president of the United States is to have a very special personality. But there are shared values about commitment to our Constitution, to the vision of our founders, to the Constitution of the United States. I don't see those features yet in this president. And those would be values that I would share with other presidents.
You present yourself as someone who is often restrained and very deliberative in some of what you present. It's very much in contrast to a lot of some of the ways the president sort of mm-hmm. goes by his gut often. You often go by evidence. Do you think, as a woman in the public arena, do you think you could act and make decisions and sort of run your office the way he runs the presidency?
No. You use the word evidence. We do believe that whether it's Democrats or Republicans, House, Senate, presidency, evidence-based decision-making is very important. You have to stipulate to a set of facts if you're going to have a negotiation. And you have to be a person of your word if you're going to commit to a stipulation of fact. And there's absolutely no model. This White House is no model for any appropriate judgments to be made about anything if you don't have it be based on evidence, data, fact, and truth.
Mm-hmm. I was also wondering about, again, back to your relationship with him. You, for so long, Republicans, as you mentioned, they ran 100 and some odd
67,000, was it? 37,000? 37,000. I take great pride in that, yeah.
Yet the president hasn't sort of maybe treated you the same way. We all often note that he hasn't given you one of these nicknames that he gives some other people. What do you think? What do you think about that? Why is that?
You don't have to ask him.
Do you have
to ask him. I have no idea. Mm. Maybe he understands the power of the speaker.
Mm.
Maybe.
Mm. Do you think that... some thought you would be a perfect sort of foil for the president, or a perfect counter to the president. You were this San Francisco,
San Francisco liberal
versus
proudly,
this president who won on a very populist agenda. Do you think that that's working? Do you think that that is the contrast, or?
Well, I think the contrast is, I am who I am. I am. Authentically who I am. I don't know if people really know who the president is. And that's a big contrast.
What do you mean by that?
Well, people don't know that he, what his knowledge and values are in terms of public policy, except to be a fearmonger.
Okay. Yeah. And just as we wrap up some of the quick issues here, you spoke with Leader McConnell the other day on the budget caps going forward. Is there, what was your takeaway from that situation? Why do you think the leader reached out, and what do you think can come of
it? Well, both Senator Leader McConnell and I are appropriators. And I've always said, I said to the president, and I've said it to the press over and over, left to their own devices, the appropriators can reach a decision. They know what the... capacity is to invest. They know what the challenges are, the competition for funds, and they have a culture that reaches decisions left to their own devices without the poison pills that have descended from the Republican side on issues that have nothing to do with appropriations but are legislating rather than appropriating. Senator Leader McConnell and I go way back in terms of appropriators into the 90s and the rest. I think he's still a member of the Appropriations Committee. I'm not, but I am of that culture. So I think we can speak shorthand to each other about how we want to get a job done, and I welcome the conversation.
But the president has said he doesn't want another cap steal, and he wants the budget to sort of go back to the sequester levels, right?
Yeah. So that would be I think he has to understand what that means in the lives of American people and how we meet the needs of the American people. But we'll take it one step at a time. It's never just a smooth path. It's always a series of challenges along the way. But we know what our goal is. We know what our timetable is. We know our milestones have to be. And we'll try to stay on that path. Otherwise, what's the point? We might as well just say we've elected a president of the United States. Why don't we all just go home? That's not what our founders had in mind. They didn't want a king. They didn't want a monarch. They wanted separation of power, checks and balances, co-equal branches of government.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to say?
I'm optimistic. I'm always optimistic about our country. It's a great country. It can withstand all of the vagaries of politics and the rest. This is a real challenge, but nonetheless, we're ready for it. And I'm very, very proud again of the Congressional Democrats. We're unified by our shared values. We have our diversity, which is our strength, but our unity is our power.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, thank you.
I'm Megan Crane, and this is Ground Game. Our show is produced and edited in Washington by Kevin Vinace. You can see pictures from the interview on our Instagram at @APGroundGame. You can reach us there, too. You can also reach us on Twitter at the same handle or by email, groundgame@ap.org. We want to know what you want us to talk about. Thank you for listening. We'll be back soon with more politics from around the country as we barrel straight into 2020.